Okay. Need to approve the minutes. I'd like to, if we can do one motion, approve the minutes from the public meeting from September 11th and the regular meeting September 11th. Everybody can look over those minutes.
So move.
Okay, we have a motion to approve the minutes. I get a second?
Second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Signal by saying aye. The ayes have it. Move on to public comment. Five star on the phone.
Anybody on the phone, John?
No.
Electing acting vice chair.
So I just wanted to remind the board that the statute requires that the board elects the officers every odd number of June. And then this June, the board elected the chair and the vice chair and didn't elect the deputy vice chair because we were having much turnover and thought we would get a problem. So that's why you're seeing this one a little bit up. You can do it at any time. You must do it in June. So this is the way to do it.
Kelly, what's the role of the deputy vice chair?
So,
congeniality or something?
Well, it basically, this if the chair is out, the vice chair steps into the chair's duties and then kind of trickles down. Both of them are out.
So if Tom and I get assassinated.
Okay. Why?
Why? Preferably a trip to the wine country.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Got it. Thank you.
Yeah, so I would like to elect Tina Hernandez-Patterson is the deputy vice chair. Can I get a motion to elect Tina Hernandez-Patterson as the deputy vice chair?
So moved.
Get a second?
Second.
All in favor? Signal by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The ayes have it.
Wow. I did not. Okay. Nice. Thank you.
So here's some candidates and
Brenda? Good morning. The audit work for the audited financials is mostly complete. We are still waiting on the supplemental actuary report. Hopefully we'll receive that shortly. When we receive the actuary report, it takes about 30 days to then have that reviewed by our auditor, finish up our audit. So we are expecting to present the audited financials and the ACFR in November, pending any unexpected complications there. Currently, staff is working on the audited financials and the ACFR to do as much as we can while we finish out these last few pieces. Are there any questions about the audit?
I have a question about the audit. Is ours any unusually like longer than most pensions? And the only it is okay. I know that. I kind of asked the question. I knew. Going forward, how the timing of it all is going to affect the ADC? So I'm assuring that the audit has a lot to do with input on the ADC. Correct or no?
Partially correct. So we don't anticipate the overall timing of the audit to impact the ADC calculations. The way the audit itself isn't a factor. The actuarial valuation work is a factor. As we had gone through the process before, the city had agreed that we did not need the full actuarial evaluation report to be complete, but we would provide a letter with the ADC calculation in it. And Siegel thought that they could do that under the old time frame. The time frame now has changed a little bit, so I'm not sure it still works, but I think we're okay with that. And also, as far as the audit goes, it is very frustrating to all of us and all of you and the PRB and everybody else that our audit is so late, and we are looking at changing certain. We basically thought it was due to, it has been due to our private equity investment.
Correct.
But we also have contracts that even once those are resolved are going to cause a delay. So we're looking at changing how we do that to try to speed up the process, because getting an audit this late is meaningless, basically.
Right, right, right.
We're looking at that.
Right.
But it shouldn't impact the agency.
Right.
Thanks, Kelly. So next I would like to discuss the 2026 budget. And I'd like to start with just giving you a little bit of information about the budget process. The system does have a budget adoption policy. A copy of the policy is in Diligent, and it is under the Resources Center. The system budget year is January through December, and the budget does cover both the regular and the supplemental plans. The proposed budget is first presented to the board at the October meeting each year, and at the October meeting, the board may propose changes to the budget, and the board authorizes the budget to be posted to the website and sent to the City of Dallas. The City of Dallas officials, they may request changes to the budget, but this board makes the final determination on any expenses for the system. At the November meeting, members will be given the opportunity to comment on the budget, and board or staff may propose changes at that time as well. Also during the November meeting, the board may either approve the budget or direct staff to adjust the budget and bring the revised budget back to the board in December for final approval. At any time during the year, staff or the board may recommend budget changes, but the board has to approve those budget changes if they're recommended. And in August of each year, a detailed mid-year analysis of actual to budget expenses will be presented to the board. So this is just a quick overview of the budget process. So let's start to dig in a little. In our summary budget, we track three broad categories of expenses: administrative, professional, and investment. Take a look at some numbers now. In the summary budget, starting from the left, you'll see the expense type, the 2025 budget, the 2025 projected actual, the 2026 proposed budget, and then in the last columns, you'll see variances in both dollars and percentages of budget to budget and budget versus the projected actual.
What's included in the investment expenses category?
In the investment expenses, and we'll go into this more detail as we go along, but broadly it's all of the manager expenses, the portfolio expenses, due diligence expenses.
Investment advisor expenses?
Yeah, management fees, the consultant expenses.
Right. What about legal?
Investment legal, yes.
The staff, however, is in administration.
Okay.
The total budget for 2026 is $20.7 million, and that compares to $20.6 million for the 2025 budget, and that's up $94,000 or 0.5% from last year. When you compare it to the 2025 projected actual of $20.1 million, that's up $610,000 or 3%. And the primary reason for that increase is the budgeted pension administration system are big dollars. There's some IT projects and then some salary and benefits there. So let's dig a little deeper. And first, let's look at the administrative expense category. In total, the administrative expense is just under $7 million at $6.8 million. And the largest expense in this category is salaries and benefits at $4.2 million, or 62% of the total admin budget. So as we look at salaries and benefits, Our current staff level is 25, and we're not expecting that to change during 2026. Two positions were added during 2025, a member services operations manager, and that was discussed with the board in early 2025, and a retirement counselor that was announced at the September board meeting. And we've added the retirement counselor because that's needed for coverage and to work on the pension administration software project that's now underway. Per the DPFP compensation policy, CBIZ, which is a compensation consulting expert, submitted their annual salary structure letter to us. And this letter included the following. The structure or the range update recommendation was 2.6%. And the salary increase budget was 4%, and we have used 4% for the budget. A compensation study is completed every 5 years, and we have budgeted in 2026 for the work on that compensation study to be completed, and then that study would then become effective in 2027. As we look at some of
that, we've tried to do that before. Is that more streamlined now? I mean, I remembered it was very problematic because it's like not apples to apples.
It is the challenge. The first study we did, which was, I think, more problematic, you might remember then we had CBIZ come in and do a study.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that, and that process was better. It still is hard because, as you know, our pension system is not anybody else's pension system. In investments or in, you know.
Or roles are kind of overlapped and.
Right.
Right. And but bonuses sometimes are applied and then not.
Right. So it is challenging, but.
It's best we have.
It's the best we have, right. And they did a decent job. And part of the contract with CBIZ when we did the process before was that every year they would give us the salary letter that Brenda mentioned, and they would only do that for 5 years. So if we don't do a new study, then next year we won't have that letter from them to rely on for compensation.
And how much are they?
I think their proposal was $14,500, but I intend to talk to them more about kind of what you talked about. How are they going to look at the differences? And so that could increase the price a little bit.
Studies.
Thank you very much. That's one kind of thing. I don't mind.
Next, let's take a look at some of the benefits. Our health insurance was quoted with a preliminary market increase estimate of 10%. Other benefit insurance, like long-term disability, short-term disability, life and dental, are projected with a 5% increase for next year. And vision and long-term care, we expect no increases for 2026. As we move on.
I'm sorry. How do we render health and dental? And I guess, Kelly, can you have a deep dive on that at one of these meetings just to kind of walk through the structure of how we do those benefits?
Sure.
Thank you. I know we went through an exercise to kind of bend the curve.
Our problem is we're 25 employees. We have no market power. Mm-hmm. We are what we are. You know, unlike the city of Dallas with 15,000 employees and all those covered lives.
And so we switched to a local law structure that reduced cost a little bit.
Next, I'm going to talk about the staff retirement plan. Neither DPFP or its employees pay into Social Security. The DPFP staff entered TMRS in January of 2022. And the history of the DPFP contribution rates are there on the chart that you can see. It ranges from a prior to TMRS, when we were in a 401A, at 12%, and down to in 2026, it's 8.81% is the system match to that. In 2025, TMRS passed legislation for employee contributions that could be increased to 8%. So should the board approve increasing the employee contribution rate from 7% to 8%, then the DPSP contribution rate for 2026 would be 10.06% instead of the 8.81 on the previous slide. That would result in an increase in employer contributions of $43,000 or about 1.2% of budgeted salary. And again, if that increase is approved, then the 2026 budget would be updated for the November presentation and an ordinance for approval would be presented to the board.
So just to, you know, reiterate that, because this was an increase to an employee benefit, we didn't build the cost in. And if you decide to approve it, we'll come back and make the adjustment. All the other costs she's going to talk about today have been built into the budget. Yes.
So now let's take a look at IT plans and expenses. During 2026, the IT group is going to focus on a couple of projects. The pension administration software, which you've already heard 100 times, and you'll hear 1,000 more before we get through the process. We budgeted $350,000 for the preliminary phase that's going to happen in 2026. And then the estimated costs for the development and the implementation phase are estimated at $7 million, and they are in the capital budget. The other area is security, and we have budgeted $169,000 for just our continued focus on cybersecurity with firewalls, server replacement, and incident planning during 2026.
I have a question. When we change or upgrade our software, will that have any effect on the website that members are using now?
Yes. So assuming we move forward with LRS, there is what the members are seeing now is part of the Pension Gold LRS project, and that will update as well.
Okay. They'll be able to do a lot more on their own.
So more. Okay.
Yes. Yeah, that's part of that. The last piece that's in the administrative section is the Terry Hines building. So they are included in the administration budget. The building is fully leased with 5 to 10 year leases. Lease revenue in 2026 is expected to be $447,000, and that covers about 75% of the cash building expenses. We are doing a few erosion control and landscaping projects during 2026. That's a cost of about $25,000. And the building HVAC is going to be addressed in a 2025 budget amendment that we'll talk about after the 2026 budget. So that's the end of the administrative section.
I have a question.
Yes.
So on the building that you have in the pie chart, it says 604, and you're saying, but of that expense, 75% is mitigated by the rents over here.
Yes.
So why wouldn't it be smaller on the budget, on our budget, or unless it gets netted with the whole budget?
Right. So we present this budget with only the expenses, and it doesn't show the offset of the rent that we receive from there. So now let's take a look at professional expense categories. As you can see from the chart, IT at 677 and legal at 630 are the largest parts of this budget. And as we dig into a little more detail, our budgeted actuary services are expected to return to more normal levels in 2026. Decreasing by $307,000 or 67.2% when compared to the 2025 budget. DPFP's contract with our actuary ends in 2025. An RFP is being prepared, and pending the results of that RFP, it is possible that our 2026 actuary expenses could be higher than what we budgeted. Our legislative consultant expenses are expected to decline about $90,000 or 41.8%, and that's because the legislature will not be in session in 2026. Also, our budgeted legal fees are expected to decrease by $430,000 or 40.6%. We had planned legal fees for the Pension Administration software project. They've not yet been spent in 2025, and we have budgeted those again for 2026. IT-related expenses for network security monitoring, pension software maintenance, business continuity are expected to increase about $58,000 or a 9.4%, and that's due to upgraded subscriptions, cloud network, and additional ransomware protection. So as we move on to the investment expenses, the total there is $11.96 million, and you can see by large, most of that is related to management fees. So as we look at management fee expenses, they're estimated to be $9.9 million, up $814,000 or 8.9% from the 2025 budget due to increased market value in the plan assets. The overall budgeted fee as a percentage of the average market value is an average 0.46% for 2026 and 0.44% for 2025. The other largest item in investment expenses is the portfolio operating expenses. We are expecting those to decrease in 2026 as well, primarily related to legal expenses for our private equity legacy funds. And then I want to end with the capital budget. There's two items on here. A possible roof replacement for this building. We have had it inspected. They're estimating another 4 years of life to that. So I wanted to put this on the budget just so that we're aware, in the next 7 years, there could be a roof replacement coming, and this is an estimate for that cost. The other item is, again, the pension administration system. Here it's showing the $350 that we'll be expensing in 2026, and then an estimate of how the cost might flow as we get into the development and implementation phase. Also included here, I'm going to go a couple of pages. This is the detailed line item budget, so you can see every line item, kind of those three categories and variances are here at the back of the presentation, if you would like to peruse them in more detail.
What's the basis of the salary increase of 7.3%?
So that is against the projected actual. So we had, there's two more staff here that were for part of the year. So there's additional staff, as well as increases in salary, and then the increases in the benefits, the health insurance, all of that combined is at 7.3%. Any other questions about the 2026 budget? So we'll need a motion to post it.
Okay. I get a motion to direct.
I'm sorry. I guess we need some direction on the TMRS 7 to 8% change.
Okay.
So we didn't actually have that as a separate motion. Mm-hmm. I think if you want to include that, then you could make a motion as we've got outlined on the discussion sheet. If you don't want to include that, then you.
But Kelly, why don't you, for the newer members, explain TMRS and the relative recent, does it even warrant that?
So, as Brenda said, this The staff at DPFP is not in Social Security, and that is a function of, we used to be part of the city until the early 2000s, and then when we transferred over to our own entity, they didn't pay into Social Security. So our employees don't have Social Security. We also didn't have any defined benefit plan, so there was no guaranteed pension for people running a pension, and we're some of the probably only few people in Texas who didn't have Social Security or a pension. So we looked at a variety of solutions, a lot of different solutions, and came up with the best solution was to join TMRS, and we had to change some legislation to do that. So we joined TMRS, which is a cash balance plan. So the employee puts in, right now we're putting in 7%, and we accumulate a balance, and then when we go to retire, that balance is basically doubled and annuitized out. So it kind of is a combination of a defined contribution and a defined benefit plan combined together. But it is a lifetime payment, which is the most important thing, because our employees, if they worked there their whole life, would not have that. So we switched to that. And as this chart shows, the system was contributing 12% of pay to the 401A plan, and going into TMRS, that lowered to 9.48, gone down since then. So this change would increase the employee contribution from 7 to 8, but then that does increase the employer contribution to up to 10.06%. So that's what this is doing.
Need a motion to allow them to.
Will you go back to the discussion sheet? It's a long
increase.
Yeah, so the motion is there at the bottom of this page if somebody wants to make that motion. 16.
I'll make the motion that we go ahead and increase it to 8%.
Okay. So we have motion, second.
Second, yeah.
Okay. Motion and second. So do we? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Say nay. The ayes have it. Now, should we
So, Tom, was your motion to adopt this motion including
yes.
the 7 to 8 or
yes.
reduced to the 7 to 8? Okay.
Yep.
Did everybody understand that?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. And I'm sorry I didn't catch the second.
So now we can do the whole thing. Yeah.
I think he just did the whole thing. He just didn't.
Okay.
I think we're good.
We're good then.
Yeah. I don't think she was saying the second me, but the second motion.
That was the second.
I know. I know what you were saying now. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we'll forward this budget to the City of Dallas. We'll also post it on the website, and members will have an opportunity to review it and then come back and make comments in November. So, John, are you moving it on to the HVAC?
Yes. Slide 38.
Thank you. So we have talked with this board once before about the HVAC in this building and working on the method and the timing of replacing the HVA system on the systems on each of the four floors that are here. And just again to give a little bit of background for those of you who may not know, again, DPFE does own this building. And we occupy the first and the second floors, and we lease out the third and the fourth floors. We employ Cushman Wakefield to help us manage the building and the services. The building was renovated in 2008. The HVA systems have been repaired but not replaced since the renovation. In 2024, we experienced a failure of the system on the second floor. And at that time, the quotes were $150,000 and a six-month lead time, or 2 to 3 weeks and $50,000 to just replace the compressors. So we chose to replace the compressors and to develop a capital plan for 2025 to address the aging equipment. So we did that. We developed a four-year capital plan for HVAC, And between the time of adopting that motion, getting back with Cushman, getting estimates back from the vendors, we experienced significant increases in the cost. So we talked to the board about that in August, that increase. But after that meeting, we continued to have conversations with Cushman and the vendor saying, how can you help us on the pricing and how can we reduce the cost? And one of the suggestions was, have you considered replacing all three floor systems at the same time? Because there are savings in choosing to do that. And so we looked at what are the risks of separate installations. One is a unit failure could occur, and that will probably never be at a good time if that happens. That could lead to loss of rental revenue. There's also the danger of inflation and tariffs because we're experiencing that every time we talk to our vendors about costs on systems. There could be some gains of replacing it earlier, like energy efficiency, reduced maintenance, lower maintenance costs. There is some opportunity costs there because we would be taking money that could be invested in using it for systems earlier than we had anticipated. But again, if we replace the units as separate projects, the additional costs would be stage up, fuel surcharges, multiple crane charges, and amazingly, the crane charges are significant. Every time a crane is deployed, it's over $12,000. So just doing one deployment as opposed to three saves you $24,000 right there, as well as the increases in equipment and material. So just conservatively, we think that we could save $60,000 to replace the HVA system on the first, the third, and the fourth floors at one time rather than doing them separately over a series of years. So we're recommending, the staff is recommending, that we increase the 2025 capital budget. We have $150,000 that was already approved to $300,000 to allow us to replace all of the systems, all of the three floors of the systems at one time.
You mean by $300,000, not $200,000?
By $300,000. Increase it by $300,000. Yes, thank you.
I have a question.
Yes.
So how are vendors selected, and is there like a list you look at, or how does it go out into the public?
So we utilize Cushman Wakefield for that. The original round of estimates, we had four different companies. One of them was a woman-owned company. We always asked them to include that in there. So we had four companies. Then we went down to three companies. Now we're down to two companies that we're looking at. So Cushman has kind of a list of vendors that they work with in all of their buildings, and they go out to them first unless we specifically say we'd like you to go work with someone else.
Perhaps you all have done this before I got on the board. But before we spend this kind of money, should we do at least a quick check on whether it makes sense to be in the building? You could envision, and a lot of governmental enterprises are starting to migrate this way, where there's a lot of really nice commercial space that could be much more efficient if we sold this building. It's not a particularly efficient building. It's not. I mean, there's nothing about it that's particularly compelling. And I wonder whether we all just take a look at the marketplace and assess whether we might be money ahead by migrating that direction. I don't have any preconceived notions on it, but I think it'd be worthwhile to assess that before we invest substantial funds in a capital improvement.
Take a look at. We haven't done that. I mean, we haven't actually said how many square feet would we need? What would the cost be if we?
How many people here are here?
25.
25 employees here?
Right, or 24. And so really, the floor that's underutilized is this floor. And it is nice to have this floor, but it is underutilized because we use this room a couple times a month. Well, we use it every week for our staff meeting, but we also only use it for board meetings, IEC meetings, bigger meetings. We do use the training room a few times a year, but when we need it, it's 75 people. So that would require you renting a ballroom or something to have meetings.
But there are a lot of these buildings that have common facilities,
right,
or, you know, if they're in town. Look, again, I have no preconceived notions, and it wouldn't take much to assess this, but at least directionally, would it make sense to just keep trucking down the road here or look at some options?
Right. Yeah, we can do that. We can talk to what would we pay per square foot for the office space we need and see how that compares to what the building's costing us net of the rent that we see.
I have a question on the two floors that we have leased out. Is the lease structured and the triple net cost getting passed through to the tenants for this, these capital improvements? Or are we, the gross lease, we're getting hit with it all?
So for any expenses on the building, yes, those are passed through to them. A capital project like replacing the air conditioners, that would not be passed through to them.
Okay. And then, and your warranty on this work, is it be safe for future expenses if we do this for a period of time? What's a warranty on the first unit?
I mean, we would expect significantly lower maintenance. You know, every day is just another day that something could go wrong, and then we would, you know, if we have a system failure, we would be out the money for that. So,
I mean, on the new units, is there a period of time where it's just...
Yes, there's 2-year warranties, 4-year warranties on the system that they would install.
Do you expect it to be more efficient as far as just doing the heating and AC with brand new units?
Yes, that is one of the items that was discussed, that we would get some energy efficiency. It's hard to quantify that, but you would expect energy efficiency with newer units than what we have now.
One thing you also might want to look into is Cushman's a fine organization, but oftentimes if you can get pricing from one of your cousins, i.e. either a county vendor or the city vendors, their price structure is a lot different than commercial price structure. And so you might want to ask Cushman, or if Cushman can't do it, ask CBRE, who represents the county, to go back and compare the figures that we've seen sometimes as much as a 50% swing from the price we get and then the price we get. And then, Rob, I think it's a great idea to look at what the lease equivalent might be. But one of the things that I think we'll find that perhaps is that we calculate in the ability of the person mentioned, so when you calculate in the cap rate would be on a terminal value, we end up probably better off. So
again, I don't come with any preconceived notions about
it. It's absolutely worth doing, and I think it's worth checking every once in a while. And I think the appreciation of the asset inflation usually ends up weighing in more phone.
We'll bring that back in November.
Okay.
So this next item, and I apologize that this meeting has a very heavy on administrative items, much more so than normal, but this is the last kind of big one for you. And this is a subject, as Brenda mentioned, we talked about several times with the board before, but I know many of you weren't around for those conversations. So just as a background, you know, everything that we do for our core business relies on this pension administration software. Our current vendor for that is, we call them LRS. It's Levi, Ray, and Shoup LRS. So that's the vendor. And the software is Pension Gold, and we're on version 2. So you'll hear us talk about LRS or Pension Gold, and we kind of use those terms interchangeably, and they mean the same thing in our minds sometimes. So the software we have really is critical to, you know, service our members from the time they join the system until they and their beneficiaries pass away. We could not do our business without the software. The last major upgrade that we had to our software was 2003. We have modified the software continually since that time with significant changes related to benefits, including DROP and also the 2017 legislative changes. We have the functionality we need. We do a lot of work outside of the system. We spend a lot of time a lot of time double checking things because we don't have a lot of trust and the system doesn't have a lot of checks and balances, so we're manually doing that. So modern technology could really help us improve our business. But I want anybody to listen to know that the benefits are being processed correctly. We've got systems in place to make sure that happens. The system is very secure. We feel very good about that, and it is supported by the current vendor. We're not in a situation where the vendor is saying, you need to upgrade or we're going to stop supporting this. So we can stay on this system for a very long time if we wanted to. However, modern systems including the newer version of our current vendor, the Pension Gold, which is now version 4, we're on version 2, would greatly enhance what we do, and it would just it would be night and day difference, the way we service our members, what the members see, what they can do on their own, how our staff works, just even how documents system. It would dramatically change the way we do our business, and we'd be much more effective and efficient and accurate with our membership. That's a lot easier process to get there. It's not inconsistent for people to change their pension administration software after 20 years. And a lot of our peer plans have done it recently or are in the process of doing that. So in 2024, we talked to the board about this process. The board said, great, we think you should upgrade this, take the next steps, and come back with us. So what we did from that point on is we hired a group called Linea Solutions to assist us in evaluating the options. And Linea did an extensive analysis working with the staff to look at the current state of our software and make an assessment of that and also identify capabilities in modern software that could improve our operations and service to the members. Linea was also asked to provide a list of considerations and a recommendation on whether to upgrade our current software from Pension Gold version 4 to Pension Gold version from version 2 to version 4, or if we should conduct a full solicitation to consider other pension administration software vendors and products. So Linea developed the following list of considerations and recommended some next steps. Their considerations were functional fit, service delivery, cost-benefit analysis, EP effort and timeliness, technology, market viability, change management, and risk management. Prior to hiring Linea, John and some staff members had quite a few demos from other software vendors, and I can tell you there are some great products out there. Some of these products could fly a jet. They are just really amazing products, but a lot of them are just too big for what we need with a plan our size and with 10,000 members. So we could spend a lot of money and get a lot of bells and whistles that we probably don't need. And there's also a lot of vendors out there that aren't big enough or can't handle the complexity of our benefit system. So the market viability question was really to say, is there anybody else out there that can handle what we're doing? And Linea said, yes, there's a few, but they didn't really find anybody that was compelling enough for us to do a full-blown look at everybody in the market, do a whole RFP. So their recommendation was to consider the Pension Gold upgrade. They told us that we should take a look at a couple of other things before we decided to go down that path. And one was we have developed internally this very robust workflow system using Asana to make sure nothing falls through the cracks and to automatically move different tasks from one employee to the next employee in the process. And we also need to upgrade our imaging system. So they said you need to do a deeper dive with Pension Gold to see if the version 4 is going to meet your workflow needs that our staff frankly love and also meet your imaging system. So we had some additional demos with LRS and we feel comfortable that they can do what we need them to do. So from there we talked to outside legal counsel and talked about what are the pros and cons of just going with our vendor. How can we be sure we're getting a good deal? How can we be sure that we're not missing anything that maybe other providers would have that LRS does if we don't do a full RFP and if we have LRS define the requirements? So from that conversation and other conversations with LRS and conversations I've had with other systems, what we've decided is the next steps would be is to enter into a contract with LRS to do what we're calling a pre-engagement project. And during that project, LRS would define our requirements, basically, that we need to have to run our system. We've been with them since before 2003. They know our system, you know, better than anybody. So they would define the requirements and also define what we need to do to be able to implement their version 4. So this project would include a comprehensive interface analysis. What interfaces do we need which ones do we have currently? Which ones will we need to go to version 4? They'll do a comprehensive imaging system analysis, detailing the recommendations and the costs of the imaging system. But most importantly, they'll also define the line of business requirements that we need to have. They'll work, you know, hand in hand with our staff to say, okay, what do you need this to do? And it'll be very detailed, such as, you know, I put in this change, can I back the change out? Those very detailed requirements. But then at the end of that, they'll develop a checklist on what needs to happen to prepare for an upgrade. They'll also provide a fixed price for us at that point to go to version 4. And that fixed price will include a cost for the implementation, maintenance, and support, and they'll also have a timeline associated with that. So that is this next step of the project, and I would recommend going to that. So the timeline is such that LRS is very busy right now, so the sooner we say yes, the sooner we can get on their list of projects to do. So as of right now, we could start the pre-engagement process mid-March of next year, and it's going to take 6 months. So it'll be done mid-September. And during that time, we'll work through them. And if it looks like that it might be viable for us to continue with the process, we could start some legal work before that phase is over, or once that phase is over in September, we could start legal work on going to the next step with a contract with them if that's what the board decides. So the cost of this part of the project, we put in, as Brenda said, we have $300,000 for LRS to do the pre-engagement project. They quoted $269,000. They recommended adding a 10% contingency to that. And just to round up, I have 11.5% contingency, and you're getting from 269 to 300. I've also put in an extra $50,000 for Linnea to take a look at the results that LRS is coming up with to make sure we're not missing anything. Everything seems reasonable, so we're not relying on one vendor to say this is what you need, and they're the vendor to provide it. So we have the ability to hire Linnea to take a look at the deliverables that we're getting from LRS, and then we have $75,000 for lease that we will use in the fourth quarter if we proceed to the next step. The last thing I want to say is if we do this pre-engagement process, it doesn't commit the board to going further with the whole program. We can decide at the, you know, once this is through that, okay, maybe LRS isn't the right thing, or for some reason we don't want to do the project, and we can stop at that point. The effort that we use, that we go through with LRS, defining the requirements, we can use for another solicitation. So that's the project. Are there questions? I know that was a lot.
Did any of the vendor discussions include taking this totally out of here, getting rid of all the IT, getting rid of all that, and outsource all of this to an outsource vendor? We're so small at 10,000 people. It would make sense that somebody else could do this a lot cheaper, a lot easier. Maintain it, keep it in the cloud somewhere, and us never having to touch it.
Well, it will be, and John can help with this, it will be maintained here. LRS will maintain it, and it will be in the cloud, and they will do all that. So all of that's happening.
But it's ours, and we're responsible for keeping it up, running, updated, maintained.
They're responsible for keeping it updated and maintained, but we're responsible
for
our
own instance as opposed to somebody else that's got 52 other groups using the same software and us benefiting from the fact that there's that many other people using the same thing at the same time.
Which led to the question, how much for LRS, how much with the exception of proprietary
systems, do they like cover pensions? Like how much?
That's all they do.
That
is all they do.
Okay. And so right now, how many clients do they have? Do they say?
John, do you know how many clients they have?
No, I don't.
Because that also, like, the bigger sampling is, like, to your point, it also benefits us because they're seeing other things and making.
They have a majority of kind of mid-sized plans like this. I know right now Austin Police just upgraded to version 4. Austin Fire is in the middle of an upgrade. Houston did LRS as well. I mean, I can get you clients. I can tell you who's recently done it. I don't think, because every pension system is different, it's really hard to run a version. I mean, nobody's going to have our drop, I guarantee you, or some of our other, like.
Those are assumptions inside of a fairly simple functionality. I mean, like,
right.
I don't want to oversimplify this, but what we probably do could probably be put into a spreadsheet and actually function that way. It would not have any controls. I'm just saying that's math.
Right.
And these systems are so open. I mean, I can build an application right now just by talking to my computer. The world's changing rapidly, and putting $7 million into a new piece of software that might be sitting somewhere else and be able to be functionally changed in 15 minutes 3 years from now may not make a whole lot of sense. Committing to doing something like that today, I'm not saying that that's not the right decision. I'm just saying, if people we talk to actually consider thinking about what other companies that are out there, big outsourcing companies that do this for a living, might do to take this off of our hands at a much lower price up front. Now, long term, it may cost us more money, so that's part of the decision. But I just don't know, did we ask the right questions to consider that?
Because that's got a nice pile on, which is, I think if you add on to that, can we go back to first principles and go, why are we doing anything now? Your point, which is nothing, and wait to see if the next version is way more powerful. Second, what's the payback if we spend $7 million? Where's the return? Just following experience return? And then the third, to Scott's point, is, well, what about outsourcing the whole thing? What's the return? So I get it, and I understand it. I understand why, but the key takeaway that I've heard is it's not on board the platform. So you don't have to do anything. It's still being maintained. It's still being upgraded. It's still being serviced. And it works. In fact, and so there's an argument that if you do nothing, it costs other than the opportunity loss of effect. But then if you do something, you know, maybe there's a return in terms of efficiency or less staffing, or you can redeploy someone. So I kind of like to understand the principles of the outsource, do you hold where you are, do you spend $7 million, and then what's the rate of return?
Can I just also add on to that, just because I just, but is there an issue with the data and no. Getting it out? Is there some, like, you know, I mean, privacy, all that other stuff? I mean, like, if we need to be, have control of that data, that's another thing altogether too, right?
Yeah.
Another point, you know, which is whenever you do something like that, data, I mean, that's another.
So these are all really good points, and I can tell you we've had a conversation internally, it's actually I think Ryan and I, about, you know, if we wait a few years, AI probably can do this much cheaper. Maybe. I'm sure it probably can, but is it responsible to wait? I guess that's the thing. If we implement the system now, it's going to take 5 years.
But you're buying 3-year-old software, so by the time you're done.
I think that's an issue probably with any system. So I do think LRS is an outsourced solution because we are not running it. It's basically, you know, a blank sheet of paper with parameters that we're saying, okay, we need it to function like this because our drop works like this and our benefit supplement works like this and the special benefit works like this. And, you know, we're kind of saying what all
they're doing the math, so to speak.
Yeah, but they are running it. I mean, they're upgrading it, they're running it, they're hosting it. John, what do you?
There's a base system, and then the for our particular piece, they make configuration changes to adapt to what our particular needs are. But there's a base system that is constantly getting upgraded, enhancements put into it. And then they're hosting the whole thing. We're out of the database industry. We don't do any of the technical parts on that. And we are part of this whole thing is a data cleanup.
Like integration.
Evaluating not only just for the conversion, but to make sure everything's in there properly. And then we get.
That's always the problem,
yeah.
John.
Yeah, like we always do that. Yeah.
I mean, we can keep doing what we're doing. It's so inefficient. But, you know, it works. I mean, right now, for example, if someone decides to, let's say somebody passes away, and so a counselor takes a phone call, they fill out a form, they put it in Asana, it kind of, you know, works its way through the workflow. But as we go through that, I have a person that then, you know, takes the file and they write a letter to the member asking for information. We get the information back, goes back to the counselor, they fill out the thing. It then goes to our quality control person who checks everything. It then goes to an executive who checks everything. Then it goes to payroll who enters it, and then it goes back to quality control to make sure it's entered correctly. Because and sometimes the calculations aren't right, and we have to have LRS scripted in. So it is just an incredibly long process. The letters are hand typed. I mean, they're templates, but you know, we hand that. A new system would just generate the letters. I mean, it works. It's just not the most efficient for the staff, and it's not doesn't have functionality for the members. We can keep doing that.
But I think you're making your case, but you haven't quantified.
Okay.
So how much are we saving? So if it's $1 million a year, then I can figure that one out. If it, you see where I'm going, Kelly, it's sort of, it, you don't have to do anything other than change it, makes it more efficient, and makes it you know, a better system. But it also sounds like in changing, we will have cost. So spend $7 million, I get something back.
Right.
That's the part I'm trying to wrestle with.
But I mean, I think I'm not saying our staff is going to be less than it is now. I think they'll be doing different things. I don't know exactly what they'll be
I
doing.
Quantify that.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm not going to say this is a money saving thing. I think this is an efficiency thing. I think it's the right thing to do. I mean, that software written in 2003 is not very efficient. And we can just be better, more accurate with errors with better software.
And it's not going to get better. You know, that's the risk.
But it sounds like it's not going to get worse either.
You don't know. If it takes more time and people and effort, you know, there's a cost.
That's my whole point. There is. Just somebody tell me what it is and what I get, what I'm investing in.
Yeah.
Is the updated version a little bit more secure that maybe we can take a, you know, typically the platforms also provide some security, like against the whole issue of ransomware or things like that?
I don't know if there are security improvements or not. I'm not concerned about our system security, but John?
Yeah, there's some additional, there's multi-factor authentication in it.
Like
not only for the our members, but for the staff as well.
Yes. So you would like me to bring back what to help with this decision?
Just one guy's opinion. I'd like to go back up the tree down and go, okay, should we outsource it? And if we outsource it, what's the cost?
Well, we're outsourcing it now. The question
that's
is,
what I think the argument is. But
the question is, should we update it?
No. Clean outsourcing. So, I mean, literally,
this is an outsourcing. This is somebody else just running it for us. There's a difference.
All right. So you're not getting scale economies, right? So you know, it's sort of like the inverse of the building, right? Which is there's no scale economy. So you may as well say
this. Okay. So we'll see if there's a way to outsource it.
Right. So if you outsource it,
you just mentioned there were four other funds that recently upgraded to Pension Gold version 4. If I'm an outsourcer, I'm running Pension Gold version 4, and I bring all four of you guys in. I put you all on the platform together. I customize it so all four of you guys can do the different things you do together, and I recognize those economies of scale. I pick up a little of that margin, and I share some of that margin with you. So it costs less for you to get in. And so you're not just one group with 10,000 people. It's six groups, maybe 12 groups, operating the same system, maybe with some different parameters that are functional to you, operating almost on that same instance of the software with the customizations.
Scott, you want to go on business?
And there's,
you want to go on business?
That is my
business. I go on business with
we
that.
We used to do this. We had a benefits management piece of our business, and we sold it to another group.
There you go.
But there's a company called Alight that does this. There's multiple companies that do this.
Okay.
I don't know if they do our specific types of pensions.
I think we have a new trustee who's the chairman of Xerox, does this around the world. I think the board would benefit and the staff would benefit for just getting his input.
Yeah.
And not in a board setting because it's beyond all our pay grade.
Right.
But we should take advantage of that.
I 100% agree. Yeah. Okay.
And then when we did this at TRS, the reason we did it, we were running a 40-year-old platform.
40, and it was a $60 million over budget.
Yeah.
Started at 15.
Wow.
And so the reason we changed is there was nobody who knew how to run the system.
Right.
So
everybody died.
You agree.
We told John he can't die, so we're good.
And then the other piece of that is hey, and I'm not poking at you. I'm just saying that this sounds like this is a really good moment to go back to first principles, Kelly, and go, hey, can we outsource? Hey, can we stay in place? Or gee, you know, the customer experience is so bad that we need to do something, and you know, we're adding a benefits counselor, you know, and we need two, and so we can get somebody back by doing that. I get it. I'm just trying to get my head wrapped around why are we doing it this way at this time.
Okay. And again, I think that the core around is the data and the privacy issues. I mean, you're giving that up too.
Well, I think I think people have handled that.
Okay.
You know, in all kinds of situations. So we would just have to make sure that that's the case. And I think these are great suggestions.
Well, and to Scott's point, the other thing I'm worried about is future proof, right? Which is, it feels like we're on the cusp of a huge change in how
exactly.
This is done.
Mm-hmm.
And in Scott's model, if you don't stay current, you lose your customers. In our model, we end up with 10-year-old software. And so there may be an argument that just says, boy, if you wait 2 years, you know, have somebody administer it for us, but it's a platform that's light years ahead of where we are today.
But the customer is really just staff because I don't think that the actual beneficiary of the field does, right? It's going to be.
The services that they get online and could be improved for sure, which would mean reduced calls and get
that's
questions.
That's
answered.
So
there's
that
a benefit.
Software,
that's a big
there's
go
a benefit
in and
see,
and that's very
important.
Like and figure out what their benefits would be if they tweak these kind of variables.
Well, they can do that now.
Oh, okay.
On our system, but they would be able to do more. They'd be able to, you know, just.
And again,
I'm not
trying to be flippant about this, but I sat in a room 2 weeks ago and watched a guy talk to his computer and build a commercial application that he launched and put out on the internet for people to sign on to and start doing things in 15 minutes. Now, that is not this. Don't get me wrong. I'm just saying with that kind of stuff happening right now and with these tools coming out, and none of this was available 6 months or a year ago,
right.
It's not going to get to this probably for a couple of years, but by the time we're implementing on this, somebody's going to be able to, to change everything that we're looking at buying here for $7 million for maybe $500,000. I don't know. But I just think we need to at least consider that and look into it before we spend $7
million. You know,
I'm not asking you today to spend $7 million.
No, I understand.
Okay.
But that's what I'm saying.
Right.
If the people were talking about spending this smaller amount of Chase money to figure out what it is we should do and what's the best thing to do aren't considering those options, then they haven't considered everything that they should be for our best interest. That's all.
Kelly, this is basically creating a requirements document of the things we need the system to be.
Yeah, and I'm not talking about not spending that money. I'm just saying, if they're not thinking about that and they haven't considered it as part of this, and if their requirements are all aimed at doing what's right to get us moving on the pension goal version 4
okay.
setup, then they're not thinking about a big enough aperture.
The requirements are for what we need a system to do,
right,
to do our job.
Right. I get that, but everything I saw in this write-up, and maybe it's the way it's written up, was aimed at what do we need? This is a precursor to a pension goal 4 upgrade, not a what needs to be done for the overall pension fund. That's my complete comment for that.
Kelly, I don't think that's...
No, the idea is to get a list of requirements, and then we just decide if pension goal or maybe there's a different solution from there. Granted, we're having, you know, the LRS people help us with the requirements, so they're going to, you know, they're going to point that direction, which is why we would have the Linea people. But is there any?
But is the Linear has in some has some relationship with LRS where they're a little bit biased toward?
No, absolutely not. They're actually they consult with pensions all the time to help them do RFPs.
So how are they looking at AI or solutions that are rule based that are becoming incredibly efficient? Like that's the really the discussion.
We need to explore that further. I mean, at this point, I haven't been willing to risk the monthly, you know, pension payroll going out to 5,000 members on, you know, the cutting edge. So, and maybe that's wrong. So I guess I need to understand, should we take this out of the budget or proceed with this phase, because I think this phase would be helpful in...
But from what I'm hearing from John and the way it's being written, I think that the overall discussion really is about what are the specifications.
Right. This,
that we
that's
need,
what
which is different than, you know, the path that we go down and looking at a solution. It's not like backing into it saying, okay, this is the solution and these are the specifications that it matches with. But like, let's just do a written generic, like, what are the specifications we need, period. And then kind of look at the solutions.
So these were our choices coming in.
That's what I mean.
Here's our choices are do nothing, which is always, you know, an option. Our choice was to hire Linea or another consulting firm to help us write the requirements of our system, and we considered that. Or have LRS do the requirements. And we talked about... We didn't talk about the do nothing option, but we talked about the other options. And we thought that having LRS help us with the requirements was more efficient because they know of the 3,000.
It's going to be based on their version 4, is what I think.
It's going to be based on what we need and what fits in their version 4.
Right, exactly. I think they might not be a source because we want something more generic and more open,
right,
to those specifications going forward.
Right. When we looked at having Linea or another group do it, I thought, you know, spending time saying, well, the account number field needs to be X big, whereas LRS knows those things, right? Or they just have a baseline knowledge, which we thought would be more efficient. But we don't have to go that way.
Was one of the considerations for retraining staff on the world?
Oh, it's good. It's going to be totally different. They're going to be different.
So,
yeah.
Kelly, did we ask, and I think this gets to the root of Scott's question, because there's a problem, and you took a pathway to solve the problem, which is great. But there's also an opportunity, which is, hey, actually, we think our system has at least another five-year useful life, maybe another 10. It's being serviced, it's not orphaned, our team knows how to use it, they're trained, we could run the thing for another 10 years. And so if you ask someone, given that I actually have a 10-year window where I can do whatever I'm doing with all its inefficiencies, what's the right solution for basically administering this service? So is it outsourcing? Is it waiting 5 years to get an AI-based solution? Is it doing, you know, whatever the program is, project administration goal 4? Is it, you know, what is, if there's an opportunity in here masked inside of a problem, which is, and you've crafted a solution that is maintainable. So I could do that. So now that I got 10 years of coverage, what's the right solution looking 5 years out, looking at the fact that what I'm doing today is not the best customer experience, is not the most efficient use of my staff's time, but I also could buy effectively what's going to be a 10-year-old project by the time it's installed. Or I could wait 3 years and potentially buy something that buys me 20 years of coverage.
But at some point, LRS is going to be inefficient to support a version 2, and they'll say, we're only going to support a version 4. So just going out another 10 years on a 20-year like upgrade, it could be problematic.
They haven't. That has not been the LRS business model. I'm not saying it won't change in the future, but they're still supporting version 1.
Oh, wow.
So they have...
That speaks about pensions in general.
Have not
and their,
had
and
that
their
model of
technology integration.
Just FYI, since the question was asked, it says, according to AI, they run 100 pensions.
So. Are they defined contribution plans?
Yes.
Defined contribution plans are much easier to write.
It says... Yep.
Okay. So, this has been very helpful. We will bring this back with more information. Scott, hopefully I can pick your brain
yeah.
on this.
Again, we may end up right back here. I just think we ought to ask a couple of quick questions because we have some resources that I don't think we have tapped into.
Yeah.
And nothing against these guys. They probably know their business very, very well. But if there's something else out there, I'd just at least like to ask because I'd hate to. Yeah, if it's something we can do by making do for a couple of years and spending half the money, it would be it'd be nice.
So are you okay if we leave these dollars in the budget now, we won't spend them unless the board gives us a further go-ahead, or would you like us to take this money out of the budget?
I think actually that's a better way if it's in the budget because you're going to need money to evaluate anyway. And
right.
It'd be better to have in the budget.
You can create the needs anyway. All of that, to me, is money that's going to be spent either
right.
way.
Okay. That's great.
We're not complaining about the meal. We're just complaining about the profit.
Okay. All right.
I like that.
Appreciate that. So the next item, if we're ready, are you all ready to move
mm-hmm.
on? Is much easier.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to see.
56.
Yes. So on your monthly ministerial actions, the only unusual item that you'll see on this page, I can find my page, is the refunds are way down. You can see that there's 4 refunds versus a number that's always much higher than that. We have reached out to the city of Dallas, and because the way we get triggered to know somebody has left and we need to initiate the refund process is we run a termination report that comes out of their Workday payroll system, and nothing was showing up. So we normally get 5 to 7 a week, and we had 4 in a 5-week period, which didn't make any sense. So we reached out to them. They responded immediately, I have to say. Give them credit for that. They have a ticket in. It sounds like it's probably a personnel issue, not a software issue, that maybe people weren't entering them. But we are starting to see some come through. So you'll see that number go back to normal.
Oh, good.
So that's the only unusual item on this. Any questions about that? Okay. Contribution update, this is your monthly running total of the shortfall between the city contributions that they're paying and what we have in the plan that the board adopted. Right now, through 9/23, which is 1 week short of the fiscal year, $12.3 million short. Add that to the $3 million short from 2024, it's about $15 million shortfall. From what we feel like we should have versus what the city is paying. Any questions on this report? Okay. The next item is the trustee education and travel. We have Michael Tagliante has asked for approval to attend the NC Bruce Financial Actuarial Legislative and Legal Conference, which is tied to the fiduciary program that he's already attending. And Matt.
Okay, so we get a motion to approve Michael Tagliante and Matt Schomer to attend the NCPRS Financial Actuarial Legislative and Legal Conference.
I'll make a motion.
I'll make a motion.
Yes.
Give a second.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Say nay.
Okay.
The ayes have it.
Now
I'm going to give a call to kick off the portfolio update.
Sweet.
All right. Good morning, everyone. So to start, our estimated year-to-date return through the end of the third quarter was 13.1% for the total portfolio. Within the public portfolio, which makes up just over 80% of total assets, we have a preliminary return of 14.5%. Also, year-to-date through the end of September, we received $15.6 million in distributions from the private markets, mostly from those legacy investments. And then lastly, just wanted to note that staff and Makita have been working through a very comprehensive review of the public equity portfolio based on some comments from the board and then also feedback we got from the IAC. We're going to be going through that review with the IAC on the October 23rd meeting, and any recommendations that come out of that will come to the board for your consideration. Beyond that kind of comprehensive review of the public equity portfolio, we have a few other initiatives underway in the fourth quarter. Of note, on Monday, our private markets subcommittee reviewed a recommended private credit commitment, and we will be bringing that commitment to the board for consideration in November. On the topic of AI, which we've already touched on a bit this morning, we wanted to just kind of include in our market charts this month a couple of things that we've been watching. One of those is the pretty rapid expanse of AI CapEx spending. I'd kind of highlight the chart on the left here. Not only is this CapEx very large in terms of absolute dollars, but as a percentage of operating cash flow, and the last three bars here are projections, so take that with a grain of salt, but it's becoming a pretty significant amount of spend for these large hyperscalers. And then zooming out a bit, when you look at how that's impacting kind of the total economy, that tech CapEx is becoming a very significant contributor to U.S. GDP growth. And one thing to note is returns on this investment are yet to be seen. If AI is able to solve all of our pension administration issues, then I'm sure that there will be a pretty strong ROI there. But I would note Walter Scott, our quality growth manager, who we've talked about a bit in past months. They've been lagging the benchmark. They're significantly underweight to the AI theme. I'd call them healthy skeptics of AI and how and if it's going to be able to return a return on what has been a very extreme investment. So that's something that we've spent a lot of time with them on, and we continue to kind of monitor with them on a quarterly basis. Year-to-date, just taking a look at broad regional equity indices, the S&P 500 U.S. markets have continued to lag other regions as well as our broader global benchmark. Of note here, emerging markets is now leading the charge year-to-date. That's not something we see often. A significant portion of that is currency contributions to the return. But then when we zoom back out to a larger look back of 3 years, U.S. markets have definitely dominated returns.
And thank you, Kyle. As we get into kind of the returns of our managers, I mean, you guys all know this, but I will point out that a 25% annualized return over a three-year period is not normal and not sustainable. So it's we're keeping a close eye on that. And I would expect, given we have a quality bias in our portfolio, we've talked a lot about Walter Scott, but I would not expect our portfolio to keep up in a market like that, which it hasn't done. On the public equity side, similar story to the two managers that are doing well here today, Boston Partners, Deeper Value, a lot of international exposure, and in WCM, or a higher growth manager. So a lot of good stock picks in the WCM portfolio here today that's kind of led to their outperformance. I want to spend a minute on Global Alpha. Small cap's been an issue, and we had the termination of the U.S. manager a few months ago. And we're going to – small cap and what to do with that allocation is a big topic of the public equity review that we're going to talk to the IAC about 2 weeks from today. But Makita had a meeting with Global Alpha, and they downgraded that strategy in the last 3 weeks. It went from a 4 to a 3, so it's still rated, you know, okay, but it was largely due to trailing performance, and then Global Alpha has made some, they would call them process enhancements. Makita would call them tweaks to kind of their process. They're holding some companies a little bit higher up in the market cap range than they used to. They're trying to trim their losers a bit quicker. So I would say they're a bit skeptical about some of those changes, but I think we also don't want managers to remain stagnant and try to improve their process. What I want to do is we're looking at kind of what is the right small cap allocation. Should we be there? Should it be market weight? Should it be overweight? Should it be underweight? Should we do that actively? Should we do it passively? That review is going to the IAC, and we likely have some changes to the portfolio, and we have some searches coming out of that. I want to get through that process, you know, continue to monitor them. If it's similar to Walter Scott, where if the market turns and it's rewarding quality and they're not outperforming, then I'm concerned. So I think we get through the public equity review with the IAC, see what changes we bring up to the board, and then coming out of that, we prioritize. We might have three equity searches. Should we do maybe international small cap first? Should we do U.S. small cap first or so? But I think we can give them some time and monitor closely. Moving on to fixed income, everything's doing pretty well there. Over the three-year period, our fixed income and cash portfolio is up 5%. And if we look down to public credit, which we will add the probably fund the ICG commitment to multi-asset credit in this bucket sometime in the next few months, up 11.2% over the three-year period compared to the blended credit benchmark of 10.6. And that blended credit is kind of pro rata bank loans, high yield, and emerging market debt at the same ratio kind of for that it's laid out with our manager allocations. So we ended the month with $2.18 billion in AUM. Investment gains strong, and we had some write-ups on the few lagging private equity investments that just came through in the last month. So that was about a $25 million markup on those investments. So it's a combination of what the public markets are doing and those kind of delayed Q4 marks on the private equity. It's leading to that $257 million in investment gain. So looking at our liquidity dashboard, we're doing well here. Plenty of liquidity in the cash and short-term bond portfolio. I'll talk about a rebalancing move next. So if we look at our equity portfolio, we're at month end kind of at target of 58%. It's quite a bit to have kind of exposed based on our asset allocation in the public equity markets. WCM and Boston Partners are a little bit of outliers from the rest. So what we did is, or doing right now, is trimming about $17 million out of the public equity portfolio, reallocating that back into cash and fixed income to try to trim our winners in this upmarket. That's all we have for the portfolio update. Any other questions from the board? All right, thank you.
So with that, I think we're ready to go to closed session. Legal.